You're listening to The Mouthcast, the first edition of 2017 after a bit of an extended break due to the festive season.
www.themouthmagazine.com.
A much required break, actually, to decompress from the unusually traumatic bends provided by the events of the previous 12 months. But in the midst all that Brexit, Bowie and Donald Trump nonsense, there were moments of joy, moments to treasure, including in the summer, the second album by my guest on this edition, Hattie Briggs. Welcome to The Mouthcast.
Thank you very much.
Heading for the shoreline, swallowed by a light that blinds. The woman on the water now. You glide.
I guess the album, Young Runaway, will have been your primary focus for the year, working on it or around it. But how was the rest of your 2016?
It was pretty mad, actually, thinking back on it. I mean, we were in America for 2 months during the election. I was touring out there.
Right.
So that was kind of the crazy point of my year. I mean, obviously, we made the album fairly quickly, actually, in a pretty short space of time. We sort of made it in February, March, and then released it in July. And then I've sort of went off on tour, well, actually from before that, from kind of March until the end of the year, I was touring pretty much non-stop in the UK, in the Netherlands, and in the States, which was really good fun, but quite crazy as well. It was quite nice to have some time off over Christmas.
Did you see much election craziness, if you like,
you're
out there?
You couldn't avoid it wherever you went. It was on every single television and everyone was talking about it. Everyone was bored of it, actually, by the time we got there. And there was still, you know, a month and a half left before the election itself. So it went on such a long time. And we were mainly on the East and West Coasts, so we didn't meet many Trump supporters.
Right.
But it was, yeah, it was just a crazy time.
So you must have been fairly surprised when he got in then, I think.
We were, yeah, even though when we went to sleep that night, we thought we were going to stay out for the whole thing. But it got to about 1 o'clock and it still was, you know, it was still going. And it looked like Trump was going to win, but we still thought, you know, it's not going to happen. We'll wake up in the morning.
It can't happen.
And then we woke up in the morning and he'd won. And we were staying with a Jewish couple. And yeah, they were just absolutely distraught. It was nuts. It was definitely eye-opening from
that
point of view.
Yeah. I guess I asked you about that, really, to ask you about the idea of being a full-time musician.
Yeah.
Because obviously, in this day and age, that's very hard work. You're essentially a bit of a cottage industry.
Yeah.
So that must occupy a lot of your time, a lot of your focus. And, I wondered what you saw outside of your...
Yeah. Well, I mean, I've been doing this for 3 years now, full time, which is the best fun ever. But yeah, I guess it's it can be quite kind of, you know, in your own little bubble, working, like plugging away on whatever it is. Because also it's you're never, it never feels like you're working, but at the same time, you're never off duty.
Yeah.
There's always something you can do. So then actually going to the States was amazing because we went and saw so much of the country and it was kind of like a working holiday at the same time. So it was, yeah, it was just good to get away and do something different and kind of see new things, meet new people, make loads of really good contacts. Mm.
Just on that idea of being in the bubble then, what is your working practice, if you like? Are you, you know, do you wake up in the morning and think, right, that's it, I've got X, Y, and Z to do today, or does it just kind of...
Kind of anything goes. There's no real routine. I'm quite good at... I'm quite motivated generally, so I don't have a problem with getting up and doing a bit of admin and then going off to do some rehearsal or writing a song and then playing a gig in the evening. That doesn't really, you know, I don't have an issue filling my time. I don't just sit there and watch Netflix or whatever. But it's not, at the same time, there's no real kind of routine to it. I have a massive long list of things that I need to get through and I steadily tick them off, but I don't do the same thing each day or have a plan for this day of the week.
Mm. One of the things that's really interesting about you is that you were studying a degree in Russian at Oxford University, so I guess there was a potential career as a spy ahead there,
it
seems.
I could be a spy now, Steve, you know.
Well, but you you dropped out, which seems such a negative phrase, but in your case, obviously, hugely positive because you've been pursuing this career in music, but I still think that was a pretty
gutsy,
bold move.
I mean, it was kind of an epiphany moment, to be honest. I dropped out the first end of the first term, sorry, just before the second term of my second year, and I enjoyed the first year, but I met one of my guitarists when I was at Oxford at an open mic night, and we'd started gigging together in London and playing each other's songs, and that was the first time I really sort of hit the scene, I guess, the music scene in London and around the place, and was performing more. And from that point, that was the spring of my first year, I just got more and more into it and more distracted by music, and I just couldn't focus on anything else, really. Couldn't focus on my studies, and I lost interest in all of it. So it got to a point where I was so stressed about it, and I knew that music was what I wanted to do. I also had a Radio 2 Young Folk Award nomination kind of under my belt, so that gave me the confidence and the platform to take the plunge.
Mm. You mentioned a kind of epiphany moment. I was going to say, was there a light bulb moment?
Yeah.
Was it an option that you'd seriously considered before that?
Not really. I didn't sleep for a few nights, and the last night in that series of nights, it suddenly just dawned on me that actually I could just drop out.
Mm.
And as soon as it had popped up as an option in my head, I knew it was the right one straight away.
Mm.
But it just didn't occur to me before that, because I think, you know, you spend your whole life up until that point trying to get into a good university, essentially.
Yeah.
So then when you get there, it just doesn't cross your mind that suddenly you don't want to be there. But when I reached that kind of moment, then I knew that that was what I was going to do. I was going to drop out and do music.
And I guess Russian is, you know, I don't know a word of Russian, really. So from the outside, it seems as though it's going to be something incredibly complex, which I'm sure it is. Has any of it stayed with you?
Bits and bobs. I studied it at school as well, so I was pretty good when I was actually doing it. You know, I haven't spoken it for 3 years, so it's amazing how quickly it leaves your mind. But I'll teach you a good word. Okay, so I think it is the longest word actually in Russian.
Okay,
which it means tourist site,
right?
And it's dosta primochatilnosti.
Okay, I'm not going to try saying it myself.
Yeah,
but there you go. Did the knowledge of Russian, obviously the capability to speak Russian, any trouble in America, let's say, when you're out there?
No, I mean, well, no. You know, I really should write a Russian song or something and see if I can hit the Russian market. People have said it to me, and actually it's a good idea. I just haven't actually sat down and done it. But either I need to translate one of my songs into Russian or write a song in Russian. I think that'd be quite fun.
So what would you have done with that?
With Russian? Had I stayed? I have no idea, you know? It's one of those things where I didn't know what I wanted to be when I left school, so I just applied for a course at university of a subject that I enjoyed, that I was good at. It was my best subject at school. I was always a linguist, and when I was studying Russian at school, I had a fantastic teacher who was very inspiring, and I thought, you know, if you study a language, you're 20% more likely to get a good job when you leave uni, and I like Russian, speaking it, blah, 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 it seems interesting, I'll do that. Seemed like a good idea at the time.
And what about music at school? Where was that for you? Were you a child who took piano lessons, or singing lessons?
I took music lessons at school until 13.
Right.
I played cello and guitar. Piano, I started teaching myself piano when I was 17. So before that, I didn't play at all. Percussion, I played, and I was in a band at school playing bass. So I played a lot of different instruments, and I took lessons at them at various different times. But
yeah.
I wasn't, you know, I was never massively focused on it. It was something that I did and really enjoyed, and I sang in school concerts and sang at the top of my voice in the car, and I sang in the choir when I was at, you know, little school until I was 13. But I really didn't consider doing it as a profession until I wrote my first song and subsequent songs, and that was when I was 17.
Mm.
So it was kind of a late thing.
You seem to write songs about what's happening around you, and in common with a lot of writers, obviously you write for yourself, but
yeah.
The universality of your songs, the accessibility of them, more so than many around at the moment, I think, these feel like generous songs in that regard.
That's really good to hear. I think it's important that your audience can understand, you know, what you're talking about and relate to it, and then react to it in their own way, you know.
Yeah.
They can relate it to something in their own life, even if it's slightly different to what my song is about for me. If they can look at it in another way, then that's amazing.
Obviously, sharing is important. And I did wonder whether it was about communication or reportage from the front line of being Hattie Briggs, if you see what I mean. Like Bowie's stuff, for instance.
As in, why do I write songs?
Whether it's to communicate and connect with people, or whether it's just to get something out.
I think I can't not do it. I can't switch it off. So I started writing songs when I was 17, because I was going through quite a difficult time. My mum wasn't very well, and my parents were splitting up, and blah blah blah. So it was very cathartic. That's why I started writing songs, and then obviously it kind of develops, and it's kind of like a bug. Once you get it, it becomes quite obsessive, and it's so satisfying and enjoyable, and then you can't actually switch it off, which is one of the reasons why I had to quit university, because I couldn't focus on anything else I was doing. So it's definitely about that, and just getting out what's in your head. But then when it comes to performance, that's when the connection with the audience, you know, when I'm writing a song, I don't think, will the audience connect with this? I just write whatever comes to me, whatever I feel is there. But then when I'm performing it to an audience, then I might feel something completely different from when I wrote it.
Well, your debut album, Red and Gold, was followed by that second album, Young Runaway, that I mentioned earlier. That period in between, there must have been a massive boost to the confidence in the way that first record was received, the way it was acclaimed. Did that affect your writing, or perhaps the way that you approach what you do?
I don't know if... I mean, obviously, having an album well-received gives you so much confidence then to go off and write the next one, so that must have helped, but... It was weird. I mean, as soon as I thought maybe there'd be a gap, you know, between right at the end of the first one and then starting the second, but I was already churning them out, you know, before the first one was released. I'd written some of the second album already, and I went through a very prolific phase of, I don't know, 8 months or something, when, you know, the whole of the second album was written, which is crazy.
Is that weird then, to progress like that, and probably your capability developed?
Yeah, 100%.
But then you've got essentially old stuff, less mature stuff, coming out. That must be quite weird.
It is a bit weird, but obviously, you know, 10 songs, that takes 40 minutes to play, and then, you know, I've got more material, so that it's really nice, because then you can play two 45 minute sets, and, you know, you've got so much material to fill it, and it's really nice having the new stuff to be able to mix in with the old stuff. But I mean, as I was saying before, you know, If I'm practicing I don't really practice my old songs, to be honest, apart from if we're rehearsing with the band, because I've played them so many times.
Yeah.
But I still love playing them to audiences, because, you know, if I'm playing it to an audience for the first time and they react to it in a certain way, or if they've heard it before and they love the song, that's amazing. So it's a lot about audience reaction to how I enjoy playing the song. So it doesn't matter really to me that it's an old song. I don't mind that. But it's great to have the new stuff as well, and to be able to road test that while you're touring the first album, definitely.
I think it must be quite curious as well to be able to look back at stuff that you'd written maybe 3, 4, 5 years ago and notice the changes in yourself as a person.
Definitely. Yeah, it changes as a person. My kind of view of the world has changed. Mm. My voice has developed, my songwriting has hopefully improved a lot, and my playing, and my recent influences. So yeah, the stuff that I'm writing now is very different in many ways to what's on my first album, which is really exciting. I like
that. Okay, so who are the recent influences?
So Foy Vance, I've been listening to a lot recently. Jeff Buckley. All sorts.
Okay. Well, we're going to take a little break to listen to your version of Fields of Gold, which was a single by Sting back in, I think, 92 or something like that. Though your version is much more informed by Eva Cassidy's cover version.
Yeah.
Really beautifully, Eva's brother Dan was involved in the recording of your version, which must have been quite something, possibly quite overwhelming, actually.
Yeah, it was a shock to me as well, because it was organised by my producer as a surprise for me. I was in touch with Dan beforehand through a friend of a friend. It was kind of a weird story. Anyway, when my producer found out about this, and he knew that I played Fields of Gold and loved the song, but then he got in touch with Dan without me knowing and asked Dan, what does he think about us putting it on the album and would Dan play on it? And Dan said yes, and then my producer suddenly told me about all of this during pre-production, that it was going on the album, etc. So that was, it was an amazing surprise. Absolutely amazing. And he's a lovely guy as well, Dan. And he's played some gigs with me since. And yeah, I've been to a couple of his gigs. It's really nice.
Did his involvement change what the song means to you?
I think it just made it more special, to be honest. That song has always been one of my favourite songs. And it connects with so many people. It's crazy when you play that at a gig. And people have lots of different reasons why it's, you know, one of their favourite songs or why they feel so emotional about it. But
it's one of those funny songs, isn't it? Various people that I've spoken to over the years have told me what they think it's about, and they all think it's something different.
Yeah.
And I remember actually Sting being on Parkinson and playing that live. And Billy Connolly was one of the other guests.
Right.
And Billy Connolly said he thought it was about the shipyards in Newcastle.
Oh, really?
Obviously, that's where Sting was originally from, but he was no, it's not about that at all.
Nothing about that at all. Well, that's kind of the cool thing about a song, you know, it can have so many different meanings for different people.
Mm. Well, there was an EP at Christmas just gone, and now through 2017, there's this mad scheme called 12 Months of Madness.
Yes.
For subscribers, there's going to be something new from you every month throughout the year, which could be an EP, could be an album, could be a single, but something new. So that's going to be quite a challenge for you to meet that idea, I think.
Well, yes and no. I mean, it's going to be amazing fun. And I've had so many ideas of what I can do. So the first month is 14 songs that I play when I'm busking, so all cover versions, but my take on things. And next month is going to be the first 5 songs that I ever wrote, reworked, re-recorded.
Right.
That's released, because they've never been released before.
Ties into what we were talking about earlier. So how is it going back to those? Is it
really weird, but really exciting?
Yeah.
And actually, having not played them for or even listened to them for such a long time, and you kind of have a slightly jaded, you kind of think, they're so old, they're not very good. But then actually listening back to them, I was pleasantly surprised. And there's definitely some really good stuff there that I can, you know, rework and make into something that I'm sure people will love. So. Yeah, I can't wait actually to kind of get started on that.
So to round up, I was going to ask you what's next, but I guess it's the 12 months of madness.
Yeah.
It's lots of writing, lots of recording, lots of gigs, and as you said, lots of fun.
Yeah, exactly. It's amazing fun. And working with my band and my producer, and also, yeah, touring a lot and off to the Netherlands in March, and hopefully popping over to Germany as well. Hopefully going back to America later this year.
See how things are going over there.
Exactly, exactly. If it hasn't, you know, all, I don't know what's happened by then. And may also go and do some, a couple of months on a cruise ship or something like that as well. That's also on the cards. So
seriously?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Not really? No kidding. Yeah, yeah.
Right, okay.
That's, all sorts.
That's from left field.
It will literally be 12 months of madness. I can't wait.
Okay, well, people can sign up for the 12 months of madness at your website, hattiebriggs.co.uk.
Yep.
Hattie, best of luck, and
thank you very much. Not at all. Great.
Thank you.
Lovely.
Keeping quiet when I'd usually speak my mind. Oh, I'm just holding on a little while. And I'm wildly hoping that life has a plan for me. Count my blessings and hope that they set me free.
www.themouthmagazine.com